You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Love is not only a feeling. Love is a beauty.
What we had was nothing. You made it into nothing.
You fear your love has died? It perhaps is waiting to be transformed into something higher.
It already sounds beautiful. I'm just thinking of already, I'm seeing Thin Red Line, which is the last Terrence Malick film I have seen. You're already bombarding us with texts and calls on beautiful films. We'll get to them in a moment. I want to find out first about Terrence Malick's latest. What's it like, Josh?
It's a remarkable film from a remarkable filmmaker. I guess one of the things that distinguishes To the Wonder from Malick's career is that it's only 2 years since his last film, The Tree of Life, and his career has been distinguished by very long periods in between his work. Look, this has copped a bit of a backlash, a critical backlash, which is confusing given that he's been a critical darling in the past, and also from, again, a wider public. So I think the film is interesting in isolation as a work of art, and I think it truly is, although I think all films are art, and that's a whole sort of separate discussion to have, but also in terms of the issues it raises about audience and what their expectations are for cinema, and also where we're at with film criticism, I guess, at the moment. So look, maybe we should start with the first one of those, and that's the film. It's quite a simple narrative. It stars Ben Affleck and Olga Kurylenko. The film opens with them in France, clearly the beginnings of some sort of burgeoning romance, and Affleck takes the Kurylenko character back to Oklahoma with her younger daughter from a previous marriage, and we see them sort of struggle to, I guess, maintain the passion that we see at the start of the film, and at a certain point it starts to break down, and Affleck has a relationship with another character played by Rachel McAdams. And there's a sort of a side character that is woven throughout this narrative, a Catholic priest played by Javier Bardem. It's not really a plot-driven film, and it's not a cause-and-effect narrative in terms of that individual psychology that we typically get with American classical films. There's very little dialogue in this film. Most of what we hear is told through voiceovers, and the voiceovers are really poetic. I think this is a wonderful companion piece to The Tree of Life, and it really is, I think, if you trace Malick's evolution as a filmmaker way back to Badlands, I think this is what he's been striving for, this form of visual poetry with cinema. And I think, even on a thematic sense, what he's grasping at here is, I guess, the question of existence, of meaning, a search for something.
But the sort of film you're describing to me sounds very non-linear, very much a visual depiction of an inner world. I've got a few texts here saying it's the worst film people have ever seen, To the Wonder, possibly the worst film I've ever seen. Audience applauded with relief when it finished. So it's...
Cretins.
Well, please try not to... Let's try not to insult each other. No, but tell me what's going on with the film. Is it... Did you find that you needed to specifically relax into it and sort of drop your expectations of a normal narrative driven
I don't think you can approach this film in the way you approach mainstream films, and I think films demand different types of engagement. I want to read out a bit from a Roger Ebert review of To the Wonder. In fact, it was his final review, which is quite prescient in many ways, where he actually preempts part of the backlash, the critical backlash and also the audience backlash for this type of film in a kind of contemporary cultural context. Actually, I might read it out now because it's quite interesting. He says, "Why must a film explain everything? Why must every motivation be spelled out? Aren't many films fundamentally the same film with only the specifics changed? Aren't many of them telling the same story? Seeking perfection. We see what our dreams and hopes might look like. We realize they come as a gift through no power of our own. And if we lose them, isn't that almost worse than never having had them in the first place?" And he goes on to sort of talk about the fact that this is a film that evokes rather than supplies. And I think that's a really quite a lovely turn of phrase.
Yeah.
I can understand general audiences finding or being resistant to this type of film because it's something we rarely get nowadays.
Yes.
I don't think the backlash that this film has received from many areas would have been the same if this film would have released, say, 20 years ago. I think, you look at the films like Dead Man, films that were still, I guess, more commonplace in cinemas then than they are now. And I think that's a damning statement on where we're at right now.
So for you, it's like a work of art?
Absolutely.
Beautiful.
It's in many ways, as contrast to Tree of Life. Tree of Life is dealing with similar questions, but in a small and a large scale, this is a far more coherent and small-scale film, and it's something kind of beautiful. And look, I really shouldn't have liked it because I don't have a lot of time for Affleck, Kurylenko, or Rachel McAdams as actors, but they all really work here.
Okay, the film is To the Wonder by Terrence Malick. Let me read through your texts. I'm curious to know the film that you thought was just a simply superb piece of art. And I'm going to read the text at the top because I love this film. One of my favourite films, and I never see it on TV or hear it mentioned, is The Duelists. Ridley Scott's absolute masterpiece with David Carradine and Harvey Keitel. And I can't remember who wrote the original discussion, but still. 1300 222 774. I'd like to hear from you the films that you thought were simply a piece of art. And a few mentions here for The Red Shoes, a masterpiece of lighting, staging and choreography. Michael has called from Brighton. Hi there, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Good, what's yours?
Days of Heaven.
Remind me about Days of Heaven.
It was his first one. Well, not his first, it was the first one of Malick's that I saw, I'm sure it was.
It's like 80s or before then,
yeah,
Josh?
Well, no, it's older than that, mate. I'll tell you. I could sit you on my knee, but I've been around a while.
Right.
It was back in the 70s.
Okay.
It had Sam Shepard. I thought your critic would probably know this. Sam Shepard, and it was the first time I ever saw Richard Gere in.
Right.
The female actor was brilliant. It was incredible. The scenery, the way the film stock that he used, even the lighting, it was set in the Midwest. A tragically sad story set in the times of like Grapes of Wrath and that sort of stuff. It was a tragedy, and it was its themes were incredible. Like they were like something out of the Old Testament, and somehow there was a plague of locusts and
right.
That sort of stuff. And it was absolutely phenomenal, absolutely amazing, and powerful acting, even by Richard Gere.
Okay.
But the last one I saw of his was that one you mentioned. It was like 2 years ago. And I genuinely got a migraine.
Okay, look, thanks, Michael. I appreciate you calling. But I can hear from the reverence in your voice that you loved Days of Heaven. A few more of your text messages here. James of Melbourne saying Dead Man was brilliant. I loved Dead Man as well. Hi, Raf. Akira, Blade Runner, and Apocalypse Now. It's not a bad little trilogy. I think Akira's coming out, re-released, perhaps. Let's go through a few more. I'd love to hear from you the films that you just simply loved and thought were complete pieces of art. Kill Bill makes art out of revenge. I guess it is, actually. Well, that's Tarantino's thing. It all looks beautiful. I'm not sure if it all succeeds for me. But I am interested to know the films from you that you thought were complete works of art. We're going to have a review of The Lone Ranger as well in a moment from Josh Nelson. But Stephen's called from Parkdale. Hi, Stephen.
Yeah, afternoon, Russ. Pan's Labyrinth, because it combined a real narrative with the fantasy aspect of it, and it was really well done.
Pan's Labyrinth. Who directed Pan's Labyrinth?
I have no idea. It was Spanish, and I don't speak
Spanish. Is it Guillermo del
Toro, yeah.
Didn't Guillermo del Toro make Pacific Rim? Is it the same?
And I walked out of that about half an hour ago. I walked out after the credits, I should
right,
say.
Okay.
Not midway.
Okay.
We'll review that next week.
Beautiful, Stephen. Thank you. I appreciate that.
But I second that motion. I think Pan's Labyrinth is a beautiful
Yeah,
film.
I haven't seen it. I've heard lots of beautiful things about it. And Owen has called from Waverley with a suggestion. Hi, Owen.
Hey, Rath. How you going?
Good. What's yours?
My one is Dances with Wolves, Kevin Costner. So good.
Now, is it still good? I remember loving it, and then I remember watching it again 3 or 4 years later and thinking, I wasn't so sure. I think we've got a bit of Dances with Wolves music underneath us there. Is it still
good? Yeah, I'm a movie buff, and I'll watch some movies again and again and again. It's about 3 hours. It's a long
haul. Yeah, it was long, wasn't it? It won Best Film too, didn't it?
Yeah, it was an Oscar winner. I think the big thing, Dances with Wolves, was a 90s Oscar.
Yeah.
But it was known for its big pan landscape. Shots of the American frontier land, the prairies. One of the biggest parts of the movie was one of the Indian chiefs takes Kevin Costner to one of the most sacred places, and it was a bit trashed. And just the whole thing, it's beautiful, artistic shots of the landscape.
And I think that was actually Kevin Costner for real, shooting on horseback at Gallup from memory. Look, thank you, Owen. I appreciate that.
He released an extended cut a couple of years ago.
No.
So he added more.
He directed that as well, didn't he?
Yeah, that was, I think, what sort of really set him up and for a fall, probably, with things like The Postman, unfortunately.
There you go. Look, a few more of your texts. Atonement, the long pan shot of Dunkirk. That's from Debs. Natural Born Killers as a piece of art. And Brazil or 1984 is another nomination, definitely. And Matt has nominated The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover. Oh, we're getting our film buff on. Jan's texted this in from a cinema tragic: Bergman's Seventh Seal, Cocteau's Orpheus, and Tarkovsky's Ivan Rublev. And I bet you there's no one else who's actually seen all three other than Josh.
Jan, take my heart.
A text for to nominating Paris, Texas, and also Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Nailed it for story, mood, filming, and acting. All perfect. Underrated film. Let's have a talk about The Lone Ranger. Johnny Depp, and who plays The Lone Ranger?
Armie Hammer from J. Edgar, and he played the twins in Social Network.
That's right, yes.
Look, this is directed by Gore Verbinski, who's responsible for the Pirates of the Caribbean films, the first three he directed. This is a curiosity. It's a Disney production, but it's hard to see how it's targeted at kids. It's very much more in the vein of a traditional Western. And we've talked about Dead Man, which, of course, Johnny Depp was in, and actually Dances with the Wolves, which is another sort of relevant text in this context. But it's been released during the school holidays. So
I read reviews from the States of parents dragging their children from the cinema because it was too violent.
Someone gets their heart cut out and eaten early on in the film. Like, this is not Disney. What's happening here? This has got a wonderful visual style, and I think that's where Gore Verbinski works the best. Action set pieces and a wonderful sort of aesthetic that he uses. And look, this is very much a traditional Western. It's sort of a setup to the Lone Ranger. We have Armie Hammer as Lone Ranger and Johnny Depp as Tonto. It's basically a kind of a buddy Western sort of style of film. We have the railroad, you know, all these sort of the tropes of the traditional Western. The railroad's coming in, progress is coming. We have the corporate interests are trying to take over the Comanche territory and land, so we have colonialist aspects as well, and sort of the genocide in the background. Part of this works, and I think what the film struggles with, apart from maybe not knowing its audience, is the running time. It's 2.5 hours. And I think, look, I don't have a problem with length, but you tell a story with a certain degree of economy, and I don't think Verbinski actually has struck the balance, and he didn't really strike the balance as well with Pirates of the Caribbean. And I think where it weighs down, and look, at, you know, you can have a 2.5 hour film, a 3.5 hour film if the narrative demands it or the themes demand it. But here, it feels like it runs out of steam just when it should be building to a really sort of dramatic climax.
Right.
And I think that's one of the downsides of this narrative, because most of it has all the things sort of right going for it, with one other exception, and that is Johnny Depp's decision to play Tonto in that sort of 40s, 50s stereotype. So it's that pidgin English, that ludicrous stereotype that I think we sort of moved beyond a bit.
Let's see if there's a little bit of Johnny Depp speaking in the trailer for The Lone Ranger.
From the time of Alexander the Great, no man could travel faster than the horse that carried him. Not anymore. Imagine time and space under the mastery of man.
There come a time, King Mosavi. One good man must wear a mask.
It sounds a bit odd.
Yeah, and it's curious because the other actors in the film, Native Americans, don't do the hey, ho, dondo, which is, it's a puzzling decision from an actor who seems to be disappearing into almost the realm of parody. Given that, you know, this is a guy who I think from memory, someone told me the other day that he's part Native American, that he's done films like Dead Man, which deliberately debunk those kind of Western stereotypes and representations. And here he just falls back on it, where the other actors in it aren't. It's a really curious decision, particularly given the film opens with a framing device of a young boy walking through a sort of a natural history museum, and he comes upon an old, you know, Indian with the sort of the noble savage label, and of course the statue comes to life, and it's an older Johnny Depp. So it seems to be aware of its critical distance, but then falls back on its own stereotypes, and I found that a little frustrating. But look, this is fun. I just wish it had been a little bit tighter in terms of it.
Worth seeing.
I think so. It's really quite sad that this has lost an audience when far more incoherent films seem to be drawing the crowds at the moment.
Look, I should mention, while we've been talking and I've been asking for your suggestions on films you love, not only has someone been brave enough to send in a text for Xanadu, which may be many things, I'm not sure if it's a piece of art though, quite a few of you texting in Wings of Desire, which I think definitely fits the bill as something that is quite simply beautiful. And a few of you as well, being brave enough to try and spell Koyaanisqatsi on the text with a thumb definitely fits the bill for the artistic film. Appreciate it. Josh Nelson's a film critic. You can check out his blog at filmology.com, spelt with a PH. Josh, thank you for coming in.
Pleasure.
The Lone Ranger on wide release to the Wonder. More limited, I suspect.
I think it's just at Cinema Nova in Carlton.
There you go.